Rising, unbuttoning my jeans while my eyes skim over her curvy little body, I whisper, "How is it not my birthday? Because I'm definitely getting my wish." Once my jeans are off, I back her to the wall and she squeaks. "Cold?" I laugh, pulling her away from the chilly marble and kissing her while I unhook her bra and slide her panties over her hips. "It's warmer in the shower. And be prepared to be very, very wrinkly. Because if you want slow, by God, you're getting slow." We barely have time to get our robes on before dinner arrives an hour later. Curling up on the sofa with her legs beneath her, Dory pretends to read while the room service attendants set up the table by the window. Her hair is still damp and shoved back behind her pink-tipped ears. I struggle not to laugh at this girl, who is the most mind-blowingly responsive lover I've ever had, while also bizarrely bashful in the presence of hotel personnel. While we trade bites of our meals, placing chopsticked morsels into each other's mouths in a way that would be impossible to get her to do out in public, I coax her into sipping a glass of the champagne, just enough to render her languid and periodically giggly after dinner, mostly when I kiss her somewhere ticklish, like the bottom of her foot, or the curve of her waist, or the top of her inner thigh. For the most part, she sighs and smiles impishly, her hands wandering over me, gentle and teasing, until I pin her to the bed, at which point she grips my biceps and makes the most incredibly satisfying sounds I've ever heard her make. Note to self, stock a case of Mincille sur Auger, ASAP.
Chapter 18. Dory. A month ago, I woke up with Reed in my narrow dorm bed, and it was like a dream. Spending an entire night with him next to me. Burrowed under the covers, back pressed to his warm chest, his arms surrounding me, I wanted to stay there forever. Waking up with him in this suite feels like, what's better than a dream? A fantasy, that's what. We left the heavy draperies pulled open last night. Without moving from the bed, I take in the cerulean blue of the bay, blending into the lighter horizon beyond it. Boats cross the water slowly, tiny specks of white or gray from this distance, without form. The suite is perfectly temperature-controlled, and the pillow-topped bed is huge, so we weren't required to sleep like two spoons in a drawer due to winter chill or lack of space. Still, my ankle is hooked over his. With the arch of my foot, I stroke the soft hairs on top of his foot, and he utters a sleepy, Bare-chested, sheet pushed to his waist, his opposite arm is crooked under his pillow, while the arm nearest me is parallel to mine, intersecting at our hands. His hand rests under mine, fingers folded loosely over the back of my hand. Asleep, he looks so young. Which is perhaps odd for me to think, considering the fact that I'm 11 months younger than he is. With his independent demeanor and his successful career, it's difficult to view him as a boy who's a month shy of 20. Except when he's unguarded, like now. I slip from the bed to use the bathroom and brush my teeth. And a few minutes later, he pads in, still a bit heavy-eyed, his hair sticking in all directions. He's pulled on the plaid cowl pajama pants I gave him when he visited campus, while I'm wearing his Berkeley tank that completes the set. It falls to my mid-thigh, the arm openings extending almost to my waist. It's all I can do to concentrate on getting rid of any traces of morning breath, instead of turning and twining myself around him like a ribbon. He grabs his toothbrush and the toothpaste, blearily squirting a blob onto the bristles and attacking his teeth. When he begins to brush his tongue, I stare at my toothbrush, running it under the water stream and willing my pulse rate to normalize. My hair looks like chaos incarnate, but thank goodness it's down and covering my ears, because I can't stop conjuring memories of his tongue. Sweet baby Jesus. Before I can leave the room, he captures my hand and pulls me back, tossing his toothbrush next to mine. Good morning, baby. Slipping his arms around my waist, his lips meet mine as his hands inch the hem of the tank higher. Should I call for breakfast now? Or do we want dessert first? Scraping my nails lightly over his hard pecs, Tracing the sharp definitions and encircling each nipple with an index finger, I watch his eyes darken. "Dessert, please," I say. And he gathers me into his arms, walks to an overstuffed chair in the living area, and settles me astride his lap, giving me a floor-to-ceiling view of the bay over his shoulder that I can't quite take advantage of at the moment. His hands alternately dipping into the sides of the tank or gripping the bare skin of my hips. He makes love to me with slight adjustments of clothing only, pushing his drawstring pants lower on his hips after producing a condom from the pocket. "That's some confidence, Mr. Alexander," I whisper, closing my eyes as he rains kisses down my throat and pulls the arm slit of the tank to my mid-chest, exposing one breast and making good use of his gifted tongue. "Mm-hmm," he mumbles, completely unrepentant about his smug capacity to dissolve my reticence like a quick, hard summer rain dissolves chalk sketches from sidewalks. I dig my nails into his shoulders and down his hard, muscled arms, holding him close and almost crying from pleasure. He chuckles, pulling me tighter, his confidence fully justified. After a late breakfast on the terrace of our suite, wrapped in fluffy robes and soaking up the sun, we dress and head out for a day of attempted incognito shopping. Reed's dark sunglasses, 2 to 3 days of facial scruff, and the cow cap I bought him, along with my standard ordinary girl appearance, fool the general public just enough for us to remain anonymous, for the most part. We earn a few double takes, especially from clerks in the shops, but there aren't any mob scenes. In a boutique shop on Fillmore, he chooses several dresses and tells me to go try them on.
"If you hate them all, we'll go somewhere else. But I'm getting you something that will make you feel like royalty when we go out tonight."
I start to object, but he hands the hangers to a shop attendant and presses me toward the dressing room.
"No arguments, because I chose somewhere completely condescending and snooty for dinner, and that's not your fault."
His line of reasoning makes a peculiar sort of sense. Until I look at the price tags. "Reed," I hiss, poking my face out from behind the dressing room curtain. "I can't wear this. It's the price of a car." He smirks. "A used car, maybe," I qualify, "but still."
"I bought a car 2 months ago, and I will personally guarantee that nothing in that dressing room is anywhere near the price of a car, even if you wanted all of them."
"I don't," I gasp, "but..." Crossing his arms, he says,
"Let's assume that for you, the price of a nice dress is the price of a decent new car minus a couple of zeros. Yes?"
I nod.
"That's what this is for me. It's all relative, Dory."
He pushes the curtain aside enough to peek inside.
"Let me see."
Smiling, he asks,
"You love it, don't you?"
I chew the inside of my cheek, appraising myself in this dress. A soft, dark royal blue knit, cut like it was made exclusively for me. It somehow upgrades every physical attribute I've got, enhancing the good and improving the bad. But I don't want him to buy me something this unreasonable. My life is made up of enough make-believe with him even in it. Stepping into the dressing booth and drawing the curtain closed behind him, he pulls the zipper down at the slowest pace imaginable and catches my gaze in the mirror. His eyes are steely.
"I'm purchasing this dress, Miss Cantrell, and you're going to wear it tonight. Understood?"
Caught between wanting to stomp his foot for ordering me around and wanting to throw my arms around him for making me feel like the most desirable girl in California, I simply nod.
"Good girl. As always, like you said."
He places a kiss on my nape and leaves the room. We're driving back to the hotel when my brain clicks everything into place. I turn the music down. "Reed, this car
cost that dress plus a couple of zeros?"
He just smiles out the windshield, and I'm glad to be sitting down and strapped in.
Holy cow.
While Reed is showering, Brooke calls him. No last name. She's in his contacts, then, as simply Brooke. I assume it's Brooke Cameron, though, of course, there are other Brooks in the world. This could be a publicist Brooke, or an admin Brooke, or a mechanic Brooke. Frozen in place, I stare at his phone's display while it buzzes. A minute after the buzzing stops, a message alert beeps. She's left him voicemail. Wandering out minutes later with a bath sheet slung loosely around his hips, rubbing his hair dry with a hand towel, he glances to where I'm carefully removing the price tags from my dress. After detouring to turn me by my robe's belt and steal a slow-building kiss, one hand slipping inside the robe to stroke the bare skin of my hip, he smiles and turns to dig shaving accoutrements from his bag, his phone feet away on the night table. Trembling from his touch and the words stuck in my throat, "Brooke called you." I walk into the bathroom. I pull coils of my hair up with hairpins while Reed shaves, reflecting that he was in the bedroom long enough to listen to the message. But I didn't hear him call her back. He doesn't seem uneasy or concerned. Expression concentrated, he runs the razor over his foam-obscured jaw, pausing to swish the blade beneath a stream of hot water after each swipe. Maybe it was unimportant. Maybe it was nothing. "You got a call while you were in the shower," I finally say, watching him. His brows draw down slightly and his eyes flick to me. "Oh?" Staring into my own eyes, I lean close to the mirror and run the mascara wand over my lashes. "From Brooke?" I clarify, trying to sound unconcerned, trying to be unconcerned. He stops cold, staring at me. And I feel as though the air has all just been sucked from the room.
"Did you answer it?"
he asks, strained. He must not have looked at his phone, must not have seen the alert. Even before calling her back, he's more on edge than I've seen him since the night he came to speak to my parents. The apprehension is plain on his face, his normally evasive, if necessary, face. "Of course not, Reed. I wouldn't answer your phone." I frown, as taken aback by his question as I am by the disquiet in his eyes and the rigid line of his bare shoulders. If I could backpedal right now and retract my mention of her, I would. I wanted this to be nothing. I wanted him to shrug and say it's nothing, but it isn't nothing. It's clearly anything but nothing. It's too late to about face. But I can't watch this unravel, not now, even if I'm the one who pulled the string.
"I have to tell you something,"
he says as I say, "I only wanted to let you know." We both stop. He licks his lips, still unmoving, his face half-shaved.
"Dory, tonight is your birthday celebration. Let me take you out. Let's have our night out and we can talk later. Or tomorrow."
I'm a coward. A willing coward, complicit in my own fall. I've never told him that I love him, as if refusing to say it aloud would somehow shield us both, but it hasn't. Like an untamed, sentient thing, full of all I am and yet estranged from me, my heart discerns its own truth, and knows that this omission is a lie.
"Okay,"
I whisper.
"Okay,"
he says.
Reed. I want to shake Brooke until her perfectly straight, Hollywood white teeth rattle. God fucking damn her timing. I don't know what message she left, but I suspect it's a why-haven't-you-signed-that-form-yet call, which can wait, because she's going to give me hell over my answer. Dory and I finish dressing in silence, and when she's done, she looks more beautiful than she's ever looked, while clothed. The deep blue of her dress reveals the flawless tone of her warm skin and matches my eyes besides. The clingy knit hugs the lush curves of her hips and nips at her waist, while the neckline plunges just low enough to give a hint of her perfect breasts. She was made to wear clothes that fit her like a second skin. Still, nothing compares to how damned gorgeous she is when there's nothing between us. In my bed or hers, with her modest demeanor suspended and her curious nature aroused, she's everything I could ever want. Your tie matches my dress, she says, running a finger over the silky pattern down the center of my chest. And your eyes. I packed a crisp white shirt and a dark gray jacket and slacks, plus an assortment of ties intended to match whatever dress she chose today. We're taking one last look at ourselves and each other before we exit the room, the mirror reflecting how very different but complementary we are. My build still angled and a bit boyish, but tall and broad-shouldered next to her smaller, softer frame of arcs and curves. Our coloring contrasts, too. My blue eyes and dirty blonde hair next to her almost black eyes and smooth mahogany curls. I imagine pulling those pins from her hair, one by one, and pushing my fingers through the soft strands. How many hairpins do you use? I ask, my words seeming like so much small talk while I'm picturing her beneath me in a few hours' time, hair spread across the pillow like a spill of ink. She smiles, but permeating every tick of her mouth is an underlying sadness that I'm determined to wipe away, no matter what I have to do. I will make her forget that badly timed call. For tonight, at least.
I'm not sure. A lot?
Pulling her to me, I don't have to bend as far to kiss her. When I pull away, I smile down at her. You're wearing heels. Do me a favor. Walk across the room and back. I won't get to appreciate this view nearly as much as everyone else will tonight. She purses her lips, self-conscious, but she complies, turning to walk the length of the 2,000-square-foot suite. Oh, God damn. Her hips sway, and my eyes are torn between following her curvaceous ass, her shapely, naked calves, or the arch of her neck, bare but for a few strategic tendrils allowed to escape the pins. She turns at the opposite end of the room, eyes widening in confusion at the look on my face, and I wonder how the hell that's possible, because she just looked in the mirror, didn't she? As she returns, I find that it's no easier to decide what to focus on from this perspective. Same flawlessly muscled legs and rounded hips, with the addition of those perfect breasts and her beautiful face. We need to leave now, I say gruffly when she reaches me. Right now, or else I'm gonna toss you on that bed. I take her in my arms and whisper into her ear, and fuck you senseless. She leans into me and gasps softly, flushing scarlet fingers, crushing the sleeves of my jacket and digging into my arms. Let's just put that on the agenda for our return, shall we? I kiss her one more time, gently, carefully, and then pluck her tiny clutch from the dresser and lead her from the room, never releasing her hand. The paparazzi find us between the valet stand and the restaurant door, which is no big shock, considering I shaved and ditched the classic celebrity disguise, hat and sunglasses. They get off a few shots while bellowing my name. They don't know Dory's yet. Too slow to match my designer-swathed date with her Habitat Girl alter ego. Once we enter the restaurant, all the diners and every employee from the maitre d' to the chef are aware that a paparazzi-worthy guest has arrived. The whole place is either staring or trying not to. So much for a private, low-key meal. That wasn't too bad, was it? I ask, holding Dory's hand across the tiny candlelit table, ignoring the audience and hoping she can as well.
I'm still seeing spots, but no, I guess not.
She blinks a couple more times.
How in the world do you see where you're going if you're alone?
I nod. Yeah, that can be tricky. If you're with bodyguards or other handlers, they just cannonball you through the crowd to where you need to be. Almost like crowd surfing. When I'm with other celebs, we stay in a herd as much as possible and head in the general direction of an entrance, exit, or car door. She laughs lightly.
That's terrible.
I arch a brow at her. And she laughs. Where's the compassion? Attempting to suppress her smile, she fails entirely.
No, I'm serious. But I mean, a herd of you? How is that not a funny mental picture?
I'm glad my pain amuses you, I say, feigning a stern countenance. She releases my hand and runs her finger across my palm.
Well, no herd tonight, and no bodyguard either, unless I can stand in. I may not look very tough, but I pack a mean shin kick.
Imagining her booting a hulking stalker photog in the shin is only amusing to the extent that I make sure it never happens, because I sort of believe she'd do it. You're plenty tough, Dorcas Cantrell. When I reclaim her hand and brush my thumb over her knuckles, her lips part. But your bodyguarding skills won't be necessary this evening. I'll get the maitre d' to help us sneak out when we leave. Don't worry over that now, because right now, I'm just a guy trying to have a romantic dinner with this beautiful girl. She lowers her eyes. You aren't worried, right? Her smile is wry. No, but I'm really relieved to be wearing this dress instead of an extra-large iced tea and fruit-stained t-shirt.
Chapter 19. Brooke. Reed is seriously pissing me off. But what else is new? He's only been doing that for fucking ever. I get that he might be busy, Reed World busy, which could mean anything from starting a new film project to banging a new girl, but he's had plenty of time to get the paternity test results and sign that freaking relinquishment form. I texted him midweek and he didn't answer. I called him last night and he didn't answer. I left him a voicemail, he didn't return. This is the sort of avoidance that makes me think something problematic is going on. I've worked too hard to get all my ducks swimming in a row, as Catherine would say. I even called Daddy, which I've been putting off doing. After that delightful meeting with my mother, I figured I didn't have anything to lose. So I gave him the shortest version possible of what I was doing, and he was silent for half a minute or so.
Brooke, you're still so young, and there's more to being a parent than you know.
He began, clearly about to launch into couldn't-be-less-welcome life advice. You think? I snapped, and he shut up right quick. Look, I'm not asking your opinion or guidance any more than I wanted Sharla's. This is an FYI call only, and if you want to tell the adoption caseworker what a horrible mother I'll be, then just go ahead. He had the nerve to sound taken aback.
Brooke! I would never do that. I know I wasn't the best father.
Oh, my God, really? Because you keep having more children, which makes it seem like you think you're great at it. I wanted to rip the gear shift out and beat myself with it after saying that. I'd just tacked a bullseye right over my most emotionally susceptible spot. Idiot.
The opposite, actually. I kept thinking I could start over and get it right.
Holy shit, I thought. How deluded could he be? Well, that's just stupid. You're screwing around with people's lives and breaking people's hearts. I can't imagine why you left Catherine for Sharla. I couldn't stop sneering my mother's given name like I was spitting out something poisonous. Or why Kelly and Kylie weren't enough for you. Or why I wasn't enough for you.
The problem, Brooke, is that with Sharla came you. With Vivian came Rory and Evan. The marriages may look like colossal mistakes from this distance, but I don't regret any of you kids. So I guess I can't understand your motivation to get your boy back. And maybe you're doing it right. Getting the child without the dysfunctional relationship.
You say you don't regret me, but you left me. You didn't just leave a bad marriage. You didn't just leave my mother, Daddy. You left me! I bit back tears.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I steeled my jaw. Try calling Rory before he turns into a teenager who hates you. Try taking Evan to the zoo or something. Go to their soccer games or school plays or birthday parties instead of just sending them money. I realized by the time I was 15 that my father never slacked on his financial support of me. He paid his child support payments on time. He sent birthday cards and an escalating amount of cash every year. But I was jealous of the kids whose dads showed up for their lives.
Do you hate me, Brooke?
I sighed, too tired to hate more than one parent at a time with any real conviction. I don't know. He sighed in return.
You always were brutally honest.
I huffed an indignant laugh. Mom just told me I was always a bitch.
What? That's absurd. I think the whole state of Texas knows who the bitch is, Sugar.
He hadn't called me Sugar since I was 10. The age I was when he left, my jaw clenched up again. I'm not kidding, Daddy. Call Rory and Evan. I'll keep you posted on River.
His name is River?
Brooke and River. He chuckled.
I like it. I'd like to meet him.
Not if you're going to disappear on him, I countered.
I understand. Keep me posted. And don't worry about Sharla. She'll come around.
No, she won't, but I don't care. You know as well as anyone, some things just don't work out. Me? Why aren't you calling me back? Have you signed the form?
Read. Give me 5 minutes. I'll call you.
Have you signed it? I answer in place of hello, trying to keep the panic out of my voice, but there's something going on, and I know it. Something he's not telling me. I can feel it, the way you feel certain storms out here in the hill country, right before they roll across the horizon. Like the air is charged, electric. The invisible hairs on your body all standing up for it, waiting.
I haven't, and I'm not going to.
What? What? What the fuck, Reed?
Will you give me a minute, please? We need to talk about...
Reed, if you don't sign that form...
Don't threaten me, Brooke.
His voice is solid, authoritative in a way it's never been, and I'm shot through with fear because he has the upper hand and he clearly knows it.
Please shut up and listen.
I say nothing.
I can't sign the form because I don't want to relinquish my rights to him.
My whole body begins to shake uncontrollably. Like it did the time I popped an amphetamine at a party, which scared me so badly I never tried it again. I yank on my boots, which look ridiculous at the end of my flannel pajama bottoms, but I don't care. Phone pressed to my ear, I tromp down the hallway and into the kitchen, where Catherine and Glenn are making brunch together, a Sunday morning ritual. Jazz flows lightly from the sound system, and the smell of waffles and bacon permeates the room. I'm walking down to the creek, I tell them, yanking a sweater from the coat rack and sliding the back door open. Catherine turns, spatula in hand, her smile fading as she takes in the phone and my freaked-out expression. Everything okay, honey? Her head angles and she takes a step toward me. Fine. Everything's fine. My smile feels like elastic play putty. There's nothing of me in it. I'll be back up in a few minutes.
I want to join your adoption application,
Reed says as I pull the glass door shut behind me. Why are you doing this? I'm trembling so hard that I'm afraid I'll drop the phone, pulling the sweater's hood over my head as though the chill in the air is responsible for my body's reaction to Reed's words. I stomp in the direction of the creek. Why?
I talked to my dad.
So this is a legal move? You're covering your ass or some shit while I'm trying to give him a home?
No. No, that's not it.
I realize then that he's speaking quietly, almost whispering. Where are you?
I'm in San Fran with Dory. Her birthday is tomorrow, so we're here for the weekend. That's why I didn't call you back right away. That, and I knew how you'd react to this.
In the short amount of time I've been here, I've already begun to re-flatten a path from the house to the creek. Let me guess. You still haven't told her.
No.
But you told your dad.
Yes, and I plan to tell Dory today. I just wanted to wait.
He sighs.
I wish there was some way I didn't have to tell her. I don't know how she's going to react.
You're at a hotel? It's like 8 a.m. there. Are you in the room?
Our room has a private terrace. I'm outside.
He laughs softly.
With a blanket. Jesus Christ, it's colder here than L.A.
I don't want to talk about the weather, Reed. I reach the creek, and my favorite rock, the flat surface of which is freezing cold. The slow trickle of the current is soothing, even so. I tuck the sweater under my butt and pull my knees to my chest, shivering and exhaling quick, fading clouds of warm breath.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
He sighs.
Dad thinks the best thing would be if we join the application you've already started.
I don't understand why you're doing this, Reed.
You've never expressed any interest in him. I didn't think he was mine, Brooke. I got that conviction in my head years ago, and I just never let it go. Not until we talked a couple of months ago. Not fully, to tell you the truth, until you sent me that photo. And now? The fact that you haven't once asked about the test results, well, obviously you didn't need to ask. You knew what they'd be.
I close my eyes. Feel the speckled rays of sun touch my face through the trees. Listen to the creek babble. And forgive him. Finally. I did.
Shit. I'm just so... sorry.
We were kids, Reed. I know that. We were too young to be in love or anything. We were just kids. These are hollow words, of course. I loved Reed once upon a time. For too long, I've held on to a silly little girl belief that I didn't misread him completely. That some part of him loved me, too. It's time I get over that. And yet, I don't need or want to hear the blunt truth.
Brooke, Reed, don't.
My words are barely audible.
I don't want you to get the wrong impression.
Okay, then let's just drop it. I press my forehead to my knees, wrapping the sweater all the way around myself like a blanket. I can't deal with this right now.
Brooke, I worshipped you. And what I thought you'd done with those other guys. I could have handled it a million different, better ways. I know you hate me for deserting you, and I deserve that. I'd talked myself into the belief that he wasn't mine, and I let that color everything else, but I did love you.
Tears well up in my eyes and soak into the thin flannel covering my knees.
I need to go, he says. I'll call you tomorrow, okay?
Sure, okay. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I hang up and realize two things. One, Reed has just told me that he once loved me. And two, I still don't really know why he wants to adopt our son. Dory. When I woke up, the bedside clock read barely past 8 o'clock in the morning. Reed wasn't in bed next to me, and his impression wasn't warm against my palm. I got up and pulled on the robe, which never left its peg last night. Flushing from the memory of Reed's follow-through on his pre-dinner promise, I stepped through our shoes, my lingerie, his shirt and tie, dozens of hairpins, and his slacks. I'd insisted on folding the dress over the desk chair. He wasn't anywhere. I frowned, wondering if he'd left the suite to get something, when I caught sight of him on the terrace, in his robe. Despite the sun's rays on the patio cushions, the air here is still quite cool this early, and our room is at the top of the hotel, even chillier. And Reed was outside, on his phone. I could have gone to take a shower, or ordered coffee and breakfast, or picked up the bits of clothing and undergarments strewn from the suite door to the king-sized bed in anticipation of the fact that we need to pack up and check out in a few hours. Instead, I went to the door and opened it, slowly. My body ached at the sound of his gruff morning voice, kept low, only a few words making their way to me. Worshipped. Million. Better. Mine. Love you. I must have made a sound, because he turned and looked right at me, still talking. To her. I knew he was talking to her. He told her he has to go, that they'll talk tomorrow. He hung up as I backed into the room, and he followed me inside, closing the door behind him. I didn't know it would come this soon. Tossing the phone onto a low table, he reaches me in four long strides and grabs my shoulders, stopping me before I back into a wall.
Dory, we need to talk.
He swallows, and I don't think I've ever seen him look this apprehensive.
I'll call for breakfast. Unless you already have.
I shake my head, no. He leads me to the sofa and seats me in a corner before opening the room service menu and calling in a breakfast order. On this call, His voice is full of his usual self-confidence, but it vanishes as soon as he sits next to me, the dark blue of his eyes flicking away and searching the room as though he'll find the words he needs to say somewhere outside himself.
Okay. Do you know who Brooke Cameron is?
I nod. Yes. He exhales a long breath, one hand at the back of his neck.
Well, we used to go out.
His eyes watch mine closely, reading and measuring. I don't know if I want to hide my thoughts or open them all to him.
A long time ago. 5 years.
Most people dismiss relationships that take place at 14 or 15. Puppy love, infatuation, a crush. But I know all too well how serious 15 can be.
It didn't end well.
He runs a hand through his hair, unable to stop fidgeting.
It was pretty ugly, actually. I thought she'd cheated on me, so I broke up with her without even really ending it. A couple of months later, she called and told me she was pregnant.
Pregnant? My brain calls up Colin, and what I would do or say if I ran into him now. He'd discarded me for no reason that I knew of, although Deb suggested the fact that he'd turned 18 and I was 15 was incentive enough. I never told him I was pregnant. I knew he wouldn't care.
Dory,
Reed says, his hand on my face. I look back into his worried eyes.
Where'd you go? Talk to me.
I shake my head. I don't understand. Why is she calling you now? As soon as the words leave my mouth, I know the answer. No. 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 His jaw flexes and his throat works.
She gave him up for adoption.
I bite the inside of my cheek and my hands grip each other in my lap. He cups his hands over mine.
God, your hands are freezing. We can talk about this later.
No. My voice is the only solid thing left of me, and he flinches. Finish. Please finish. He closes his eyes briefly before answering.
He was mine, but I didn't know it. I didn't talk to anyone about it, Dory. My parents didn't know. I've never even told John.
How do you know he's yours?
We just did a paternity test.
Just as in recently. I'm missing something, and I don't know what it is. When children are adopted, their biological parentage is no longer an issue. But you said she gave him up. Why?
A couple of months ago, she hired a private investigator to look for him. She was having nightmares about him and just wanted to make sure he was okay. The PI found out that he'd been removed from his adoptive home months ago due to drugs and gross neglect. He's in foster care now, so she's applying to adopt him. And so am I.
The hands that he thought were cold moments ago flash like ice and then go numb. I can't feel anything. And then, suddenly, I feel everything. Waves of chills run from the back of my neck to my toes, millions of tiny pinpricks like sharp, agonizing barbs, as though some outside source grips my throat. My airway narrows and expands over and over, and with it, my vision. I told you about everything that happened to me with Colin, I gasp, and you never said. You never told me.
Dory, I didn't know. I thought Brooke had cheated on me. I swear I didn't think he was mine. We were both so young and stupid and stubborn. We didn't talk like you and I talk.
Like you and I talk? Like when you told me you had a child with someone? He drops his head in his hands.
I didn't think he was mine. And I had nothing to do with her decision.
So you left her to make that choice. Alone. And now you get a second chance at doing the right thing because she made a different choice than I made? I shift away from him, but he reaches out and grabs my wrists.
God damn it, Dory. No, it's not like that.
You said you're both adopting him, so you're getting back together?
No, Jesus! This isn't about me and Brooke. It's only about River.
His child has a name. Of course he does.
River? He's 4 and a half. I have a picture.
He lets go of me, stands to grab his phone from the table and clicks through it. When he offers it, I reach to take it, thinking, I don't know him. But I see him in his child's face. And if anyone needs saving, it's this little boy. His sadness is unmistakable, mirroring so many small faces from East LA to Quito. Children shouldering the weight of the world, a world they didn't create or ask to be abandoned to.
Dad is telling Mom this weekend. He's talking with contacts in LA County Family Court tomorrow, and we're going to Austin on Tuesday to speak with Brooke's attorney and possibly the caseworker and judge. Last but not least, I'm not sure when this is going to break publicly, but once it does, it'll be a circus.
He takes the phone from my hand and tips my chin, looks into my eyes.
Dory, say something.
The brusque rap on the door startles us both. He sighs.
That's breakfast, I guess.
While he rises to let the attendant in, I stare out the window at the boats in the bay. From this distance, they look like models or radio-powered toys. I imagine the holders of the remote controls are bored demigods occupying rooms like this on the top floors of tall buildings. I feel his eyes sweep over me, neither of us speaking, while our breakfast table is set up. He is not the self-centered, arrogant boy who showed up at Habitat last summer, calling me a hypocrite for dismissing him and then proving to me that he was worth saving. Not the boy who urged me to be reckless with him last fall because he was safe. Not the boy who showed up on the other side of my parents' screen door weeks ago, telling me he was all in before carrying me up the stairs and making love to me in my childhood bed. This is Reed Alexander, the stuff of fantasy for ordinary girls. And in a few hours, this fantasy will be over. I'll return to my life, and he'll return to his.
Chapter 20. Reed. Dory is as quiet on the drive back to the dorm as she was on the drive into the city 2 nights ago. I slide into a rare open parking spot and offer to walk her in, but she has that exam to study for, and if I get out of this car, there's the possibility I'll be recognized, and she clearly doesn't need to deal with that right now. We angle over the center console to kiss goodbye until I murmur, "Screw this." Slide my seat back as far as it will go and pull her into my lap. Better. Pushing my hand into her hair, I draw her mouth to mine and kiss her deeply. Every slide of my tongue against hers, every shared caress a declaration of all she means to me. Inhaling shakily, she rests her head against my shoulder. "You didn't exactly encourage a lot of study time this weekend, you know." Her hand lies over my heart. "Well, I got plenty of study time. I'm pretty sure I could pick you out of a lineup of only belly buttons or kneecaps or pinky toes now, let alone the parts I committed to memory ages ago. For instance, I could have identified you by those delicious lips 2 days after meeting you." She blinks up at me and tilts her head back on my arm. "But you didn't kiss me until, you know, the pink closet." I fix her with a suggestive look. "I remember. But those lips were one of the first things I noticed about you. I couldn't stop thinking about them, on or off sight. I kissed you 100 times in my imagination, and once I'd actually kissed you, all I could think about was doing it again." I run the pad of my thumb across her plump lower lip, recalling all the wretched time I spent trying to move on, trying to forget her. It had taken no more than 2 seconds of seeing her face again to realize that I hadn't forgotten a damn thing. I wish I could read her mind. She's a pensive, deep-thinking girl, and it's not unusual for her to stare into space, lost in her thoughts. Normally I'm fascinated when she does this, the shifting emotions crossing her face, marked by faint smiles, frowns, or grimaces. That's not how I feel now, when I can't escape the uneasy awareness that her contemplations concern me.
What are you thinking about?
She blinks distractedly, and then stares up at me with eyes so dark and fathomless that I'm sure I'll never know all the mysteries behind them. Even if I can't follow her when she withdraws inside herself like this, I want her to know that I'll always be there to pull her back to solid ground before she goes under. That I won't let go.
I don't want to say goodbye,
she says, her eyes shining. Then don't say it, I say, ignoring the subtle premonition in her words, ignoring the fact that she's not asked a single question about River or Brooke or the adoption. Ignoring my own hunger to hear her tell me, just once, that she loves me. River.
Wendy told me I might get a new mama. That I might go live with her. The social lady came to talk to me about it. Her name is Chris. She comes to talk to me sometimes. About mama. Or about Wendy. Or about how I feel or what I think when I hide food. She said that I was just going to visit with the lady who might want to be my mama, except Chris said mother, not mama. Then she said, can you draw me a picture about that? That's what they always want me to do, draw a picture. I don't want a new mama. I want to stay here with Wendy. And I wish Sean would find a new mama instead. But I don't know how to draw that.
Chapter 21 Brooke.
So what you're telling me is, we're making a scrapbook.
Reed lifts an eyebrow and gives me a look of undisguised bafflement. Photos and scrapbooking supplies borrowed from my stepmother are spread across the huge scarred farm table in Catherine's kitchen where we sit side by side on a bench seat. My caseworker Sheldon calls it a lifebook. But yeah, basically it's a scrapbook.
And we have to do this because...
I heave a sigh. I can't blame him. Crafts are something neither of us does without a damned good reason, if ever. River's caseworker will give it to him, to show him who we are and where we live. Where he will live. Hopefully, his foster mother will read what we write to him. Sheldon says some kids are thrilled shitless to leave their foster homes, and some aren't. So this helps. Reed laughs.
Sheldon, the social worker, said thrilled shitless.
I shrug and laugh, too. Sheldon's pretty laid back. He shakes his head.
I'm just trying to imagine Dory ever saying that to a client.
One corner of his mouth turns up.
Nope. Nothing doing.
Not for the first time. I wonder about this girl who's so unexpectedly significant to Reed. He pulls his phone from his front pocket and checks it for the third time in the past half hour. Whatever he's looking for, it isn't there. While you've got that out, let's go hook it up to my computer so we can print out the photos you took. I get up, and he follows me down the hallway to my bedroom. As I'm booting my laptop, he examines my room. There's not a lot to it, frankly. I'm a minimalist everywhere I go. I stripped my apartment in L.A. of glass tables and white upholstery before I moved. But I don't do cozy. Not naturally, which worries me where River is concerned. What if cozy is required for a child his age? I've never painted walls anything other than some neutral tone. There were no photos out, anywhere in the apartment. My living room furniture has never encouraged a spontaneous nap. I've never had a pet, not even fish. I kill plants.
You are different here, Reed says.
I glance back at him as he's scooting onto my bed, one long leg off the side, foot on the floor, the other angling so the sole of his boot doesn't soil my white comforter. Reclining against the mound of pillows, he folds his hands behind his head, forearms flexed below the haphazardly rolled-up sleeves of his light blue button-down. His head tips to the side as he inspects the room and me, and I turn back to the computer to keep from squirming. I know what he means, I think. I'm just not sure whether I care for his spontaneous appraisal. I like being looked at when I know I've taken pains to look hot. Such is not the case at the moment. Ignoring both my blow dryer and flat iron, I haven't bothered to tame my naturally messy waves into the sleek, blonde waterfall mane I'm famous for. I'm wearing a long-sleeved thermal t-shirt in a plain heather gray, over worn bootcut jeans and my favorite leather-tooled Ariat boots. Nothing about me says L.A. right now. Or Hollywood. What do you mean? I ask, feigning unconcern as I pull up the photo folder labeled Lifebook. He considers before he speaks, which is either thoughtful or shrewd.
It's more than just how you're dressed, or the lack of makeup, though that's noteworthy. Your body language and expressions are, I don't know, more relaxed. And your accent is more prominent. You're less...
I turn around and fix him with a sardonic look. Less stylish? Less sophisticated?
I was going to say, less counterfeit. I know what you think of your mother and how much you don't want to be like her, but you aren't like her. You were never like her. Your stepmother? She's the one you sound like, by the way. I know that now that I've met her. Though your time in L.A. has probably weakened your accent permanently.
He looks at me through dark, thick lashes some blondes would commit homicide for.
Which I've always believed to be a regrettable loss.
What do you mean, counterfeit?
His brows draw together. You wear the L.A. girl part well. But it's a role, isn't it? You were like this when I went by your apartment a few weeks ago, too. This is the real Brooke Cameron.
It takes everything I've got not to fall out of my chair.
Wow, when did you get to be so psychoanalytical? Is your girl responsible for this new uncharacteristic awareness?
He smiles.
Probably.
Interesting. I think I need to meet her.
You will, no doubt.
I angle my head, struck by the thing I've just figured out. He's in love with her. You're really serious about her.
He nods, but doesn't look happy.
You did tell her about all this. I swirl a finger between us. River, the adoption, etc. Right? He nods again, lips compressed.
She's had to deal with some rough shit lately. It's messed up her ability to trust.
I'm sure this didn't help any. Or you keeping it from her.
His mouth flattens and he shakes his head once. No.
So why'd you do it, Reed?
Why did I keep it from her?
No, that's yours to puzzle out. I want to know why you're doing this.
Why you want to adopt River?
He flicks a blade of grass from his boot. Slick, trendy, and black. Not cowboy boots like mine. Not work boots like something Graham might wear. Perfect L.A. boy. But in Austin, straight up hipster, not that he'd care.
I think it's a byproduct of who I've become since I've known Dory. Since I was sentenced to work on that house. It's like I see issues I didn't see before. And my connection to them. My obligation to do something where I can.
He looks me in the eye.
Where River is concerned, it's a pretty hardcore responsibility.
I've only ever felt that sort of responsibility where River is concerned, I admit. I doubt I'll ever have any weighty sense of social commitment, but I feel linked to River, even if I've never seen him.
Shrugging, he says, he's part of you.
I bring the laptop to the bed and sit, handing it to him. He's part of you, too.
He hooks up his phone and brings up the photos I asked for, of himself, his parents' house, and the room they've set aside for River.
Wasn't this your bedroom? I recognize the placement of the windows and the dark sliding closet doors. It's been 5 years. But I remember Reed's bedroom better than which house or condo Mom and I were living in at the time.
I moved to my grandmother's suite a couple of months after.
After we broke up. You can say it. I won't shatter, you know. We sit shoulder to shoulder on my bed, which seems as unbelievable as the subject we're calmly discussing. I know this might be difficult to hear, Reed, but I'm kind of over you.
He smirks. Yeah. When you went all Operation Graham last spring and deployed me to seduce Emma, I kind of figured that you were well over me.
Graham again. I close my eyes and press my fingers to my chest. Damn.
Still upsets you, huh? I guess you really did love him. God. There's no fucking way I'm ever taking Dory around that guy, because seriously.
His words are tongue-in-cheek, but the underlying tone is anything but. Last spring, I was so sure I could deal with all or nothing, I say. When I lost him, I knew that wasn't true, but it was too late. In that moment, I'd have given anything to take it all back. Our friendship saved me. He saved me. No matter what I did or who I pretended to be, he was there for me. I don't know who I'd be if it hadn't been for him. Copying the photos over to my computer so we can print them out, Reed says,
I'm sorry I did that to you, Brock.
I shake my head. It wasn't you. I've realized some things in the past few days, like how I felt when my father left, when he stopped paying any attention to me. I was forever looking for something or someone to fill that void. I send Reed's photos to the printer in Glenn's home office, shut my laptop, and slide it off my lap. There are empty places in all of us, and some of them will never be filled. You couldn't fill the loss of my father, and I blamed that on you. Graham couldn't fill it,